Duck South Studios in Oxford, Mississippi.
We're mass communicating.
It's a bold strategy, Cotton. Let's see if it pays off for them.
This is the End of the Line podcast, powered by DuckSouth.com.
I gave it a 10.
Sweep the leg. You have a problem with that.
And now, here are your hosts, Rocky LaFleur.
Everybody on? Good.
Great. Grand. Wonderful.
No yelling on the bus.
Josh Webb.
Sorry I had a fight familiar, your butt at the party.
And Jake Latondras.
I am bad news.
Also starring Rob Kroon.
I bet this guy's into the woods $100.
And Bradley Ramsey.
No, Mark, didn't say it.
Showtime.
All right, here we go. Hold your ears, folks. It's showtime.
Showtime, everybody! Showtime!
Welcome to the End of the Line podcast. I'm Rocky LaFleur in the rainy Duck South Studios. Inside the Duck South Studios. Good Lord, Josh, it's freaking cold outside.
And it's cold. And getting colder every day. Every minute of every day.
Finally. I saw there's a chance of snow on Monday. We're talking November the 10th here. Chance of snow on Monday, and it's supposed to be 20. I'm pulling it up as I'm
talking. I'm trying to do the same thing.
I'm not the world's greatest doing two things at once. Let's see. Daily. What day is it supposed to snow?
Is it Monday? I think Monday.
Yep, there it is. Periods of rain and snow on Monday night. 90% chance. And then on Tuesday, next day, it's going to be 21 for the low here in Oxford, Mississippi. So in Corinth,
I did say Corinth.
It's probably going to be about 18 or 19.
I won't be there on Monday. I'll be back in Delta over the weekend.
But you are in the Corinth studios today, correct?
I am there.
Well, hey, guys, coming up in just a minute, the next chapter in the Thunder Rolls podcast series we're doing with Spencer Halford. Spence, last night, we've already recorded this because Spence is up in Missouri hunting right now, and we had to knock it out during the nighttime while he had some free time on his hands. He's, like I said, up in Missouri filming some hunting right now, but you got to just listen to this story just for the... Spence at one time was a beer salesman. And you'll find out the rest of the story when you listen to this chapter that's coming up in just a second.
There's so much to that story. And look, and I said it in the podcast, like, and Rocky and I have said it 100 times before. A lot of times we never have a set like idea of where we want a podcast to go. Now, we have stuff we might want to talk about, questions we might try to ask, but we never really know, even with some of our best friends on here, we really don't know which way these things are going to go. And I promise you, and I said it in the middle of the podcast last night, I had no clue we were going to go from where we started to where we ended up in that podcast. It is...
The most regretting thing about last night is when we got Spencer to do the beer call, where, you know, ice cold beer, I don't know exactly what he said, because it sounded like he smush-faced the phone when he did it.
I think he did. I think he was trying to not be too loud, but, you know.
But he did do his beer call.
He did it.
It's like I said, it's a pretty cool, you don't want to miss this chapter in Spencer's story, but, you know, we run into that a lot. You have technical difficulties when it comes to these phones when you're trying to record a guest, because you and I are being recorded digitally, but when you have a guest that just dials in to the Duck South hotline, and they don't have professional headphones to record these with, you know, they may hold the phone too far away from their mouth. You know, you do these tests, these sound tests before you start recording, and that's the reason you hear differences in the way that we all sound. Josh and I pretty much are consistent because you have great headphones that plug into that plug into your phone that record us digitally. But with other people, it just sounds like an old dial-up phone.
There's very few people that we have on here that actually have headphones. And I know a lot of people probably think, well, earbuds work. Earbuds do not work. If your phone is in a case, some people, it's funny because some people, when we get on there, they think we're almost not mad at them, but kind of, you know, telling them what to do. But, you know, like if a phone is in a, like you got an iPhone in an OtterBox, sometimes you take it out. I mean, like we have to get people to take it all the way out of the case and talk on speakerphone. Sometimes somebody else can have an iPhone and they could shove it under a pillow and it still sounds fantastic. I have no idea what happens sometimes. I mean, I just don't. So we have to, there's always 5 or 10 minutes of playing around with it. So whoever we have on here sounds halfway decent. And you know, and sound quality is not something that we really try to do a whole lot with, because other than me and you, it's really not controllable. And me and you are usually always going up and down the road or somewhere. We're never together when we do these things. We're not in front of a microphone and some fancy editing equipment. Our guest, I mean, crap. We've done it any which way you can imagine. There's always 5 or 10 minutes of playing around with the sound to get it the best it is, and sometimes it's still not that good. But I think Spencer, doing his impression of himself last night, I think he was just trying not to be too loud. But, you know, maybe we need to get him to do it again at some point.
Yeah, we'll get him to do it one more time. I will say this, you know, there may be some changes coming in the very, very near future for the End of the Line podcast. May be surprising to some, but could be coming. Hey, speaking of phones, man, I got the call yesterday from my mom. And it may not mean as much to you because you are kind of a generation below me. 15 years apart.
I ain't that many.
42.
Yeah, I'll be 30 in a month, 2 months.
12 years apart, so that's almost a generation. You could have sprouted a generation at 12.
what mama need?
So, my mom called me from the AT&T store yesterday. She's still running a regular iPhone. I think it's, like I said, the iPhone 2 or something like that. I'm not 100% sure, but she upgrades to an iPhone 8, you know, so now she's carrying around a TV screen in her purse.
Yep.
And she gives me the bad news. She's like, since I've got this fancy phone, I think I'm going to cancel my home phone.
Oh.
Now, to a kid, the greatest technology that you had in your house as a kid was your phone. That's kind of sad, man. There's no other numbers. Maybe my Social Security number that I remember better than my home phone number.
I still remember my home phone number. It was the same all my life. And until Mom moved out of the house that, the big house we had. And, of course, when I was off and married and my brother and sister were in college, so she sold that house and has a smaller house in town, which is where I am right now. She kept that home phone until she moved. So she might have got rid of it in the last year or so she was living in that house. But I remember that. I had that same feeling that you did. It was like, man, dang. I mean, I don't know. You saw that same number. And you're right. That and my Social Security number are probably the only numbers that I remember. That's crazy, isn't it? But I don't think, and I remember, you know, it was funny talking about that. I remember when I was in high school, there was some friends of mine that are they're about your age. And they, when I was in high school, I was staying with them one weekend, and they were explaining, they had some friends over, and they were explaining to them then, it's just been 10, 12 years ago, that they weren't going to have a home phone, a landline in their house anymore. They were just going to have cell phones. And their friends were like, what? Y'all are crazy. And even me, I was like, huh? That's weird. That's crazy. But then you fast forward to now, shoot, there's nobody that has them. I mean,
nope.
Nobody.
Nope.
I don't think it'd be right to, without dedicating the beginning of this podcast to the home phone that I grew up with, you know, far back as a rotary dial man. When I first remembrances of a phone, the first memories of the phone at our house is we had a party line. That's how old I am. And I don't know if it's how old I am or just how backwards we lived out in the rural community that, you know, we still had party lines in the early and mid-80s. But my dad, let me say this. My dad, the funniest thing in dealing with a party line is a lot of my childhood stories, you always hear about Heath and Keith. Heath, Keith, Russ, and Chris, my best friends, we were inseparable growing up. But anyway, we shared a party line with Heath and Keith. And you've heard me talk about this before a little bit. But Heath and Keith had an older sister, and her name was Heather. And Heather would literally get on the phone at 7:30 at night, and she didn't get off until 11 every night. Well, my dad, being a chemical salesman, you know, most of, for a farmer, the bug reports come in late in the afternoon or at night. They just got dropped off at the office. And back in those days, that's when you sprayed like crazy. Now we have BT cotton. Times have changed. There's not a lot of what going on. Back then, you had pole weevils, you had bugworms, blah, blah, blah. I mean, it was every 3 days you were spraying.
Yeah, constant. That's right.
So millions of dollars were riding on the line. So my dad would sit, you know, after he'd get home at 8 o'clock at night, he was still getting calls till, gosh, you know, till he went to bed at 9:30 or 10. And millions of dollars were riding on the line. And you'd pick up this phone, and you would hear Heather talking about the new kids on the block and who was cute and blah, blah, blah. You know, right in the dead heat of the summer of August and September when things are really exploding, you know, he'd finally have enough. He'd say, listen, you got to get off this damn phone. The joys of a party line. So if you don't know what a party line is, you share the line. You know, their phone wouldn't ring when somebody dialed your number and vice versa. But a party line, you shared that line.
Yeah.
That dial-out line. So if I was on the phone, you'd pick it up and listen to me. But, man, I learned every high school rumor in the world growing up with Heather. So, you know, and then going up and, I don't know, man. I spent so much time on the phone talking to girls growing at home. We didn't have cell phones back then. You had the old CB truck radio phones.
Yeah, those back phones.
This is before the back phones, where you had it was working off the CB radio waves. Like I can still remember, my dad's number was 455-1030. You wait for the beep, and then you hit 3320. After that. I could dial 662-235-5316 without even looking at my phone. That was my home phone number. Don't see any fuckers call my mama.
Ours was always 287-8817. And I don't know who that dials nowadays. I don't know what it dials, but I mean, that's what mine was for 25 or 6 years of my life. And it was mom and daddy's number before that. I mean, it was theirs. As soon as they got married, they kept the same one for all those years. So, yeah, I don't know. And there's times that I've caught myself dialing it and just, I don't know, you know, it's crazy. I don't know. Technology's crazy.
Times change, man. But, you know, I can't understand why a home phone would still cost, you know, $80 to $100 today. That freaking phone should be like $20. That's what they ought to be charging for that.
And they do all they can to get you to get one nowadays, too. Yeah. I just can't imagine. I don't know. I don't know. That's
goodbye, old childhood phone number. Sad to see you go. This part of the episode is being dedicated to you. Josh, what do you got planned for the weekend? You went to a playoff football game tonight, correct?
I am tonight. We usually spend Thanksgiving at my aunt's in right outside Somerville, Tennessee. But we're not traveling this year with Thanksgiving. We'll be for the first time in ever, we're not going to travel. So while I'm in town, my mama's night. We're going to go to Somerville. Today's Friday. We're going to go to the football game tonight. My little cousin is playing the playoff game and go see all the family that I won't see over Thanksgiving. I'm by myself. Katie and Waylon are they're still in the Delta, but I'm turning around and going home tomorrow. I had some business and work to take care of up here today, first thing in the morning, and then I'm gonna get back and I'm gonna get my butt in a tree. I'm gonna deer hunt the rest of the weekend. Enough is enough. I have only deer hunted twice this year, which is about 98% less than what I usually would have hunted by now.
And Katie hadn't found out what the baby is, right? Not finding out until
the day.
So
until that day.
Have you tried to get a nurse to tell you, ultrasound person, like, hey, what is it? Have you done it?
Oh, it's, yeah, I've tried. I mean, it's like a big thing when we go, but I just, I don't. And at this point, now, it drove me crazy for months, but now, I mean, the baby's going to be here in, we're just like 2 months to due date right now. So,
hey, let me give you a little piece of advice. Do you not find out what it is? Run a contest on Facebook on the way to the hospital for everybody to guess the weight and the sex. It's fun. Give away a gift card to Walmart.
Yeah. Well, I'm definitely going to do something like that. I've already thought about that. Because, I mean, you know, we always do the weight and the length, stuff like that. But now, and that's kind of fun. But now that everybody can weigh in on what they think the sex is going to be.
It was fun. Yeah, I did it with all three of mine. I didn't find out a single one. Ran a contest.
I didn't know y'all did it with all three. I knew y'all did it with, I guess, Taylor and Fleming. I know one, but I didn't know y'all did it with all three.
Yep, all three. Did not find out. All right, well, Josh, I will talk to you later on. We need to get to that story or Thunder Rolls with Spencer. All right, guys, like I told you on the front end of the podcast, Spencer Halford is joining us. I better call him Spence before he gets me, Josh, with the story podcast series called Thunder Rolls. Spencer, Josh, how are y'all?
Great here in central Missouri in the hill country. I don't know where the ducks are, but they ain't here. So the
great movement from the north has not happened yet.
Oh, it may have happened. I'm not sure that we're under the I'm not sure we're on the I-55 of the duck flyaway right here. Dylan says we are, but I have not seen it yet with my own eye. So let's just put it that way. So they may be here and they may be going to come through here, but they were not where we hunted this morning. We're going to see. We got about 2 inches of snow on the ground right now. So tomorrow morning will be an interesting go at it.
What part of Missouri are you in? You don't have to tell me a town, just
no, we're about 2 hours. Yeah, we're about 2 hours north of Springfield. So we're due east of Kansas City, kind of a hair south and east of Kansas City, maybe 70, 80 miles east of Kansas City and just a touch south of due east. So we're in the town of Clinton. We're hunting on private property. We're hunting on like this creek, like a river, a little, it's not a river. It's more like a creek that floods and they pump out of this creek into these duck ponds. And so there's like trees all around it, but it's like a pond, you know, it's like a pool is what they call it actually up here, what everybody calls it. So it looks just, I mean, honestly, it looks just like the stuff that Vandermore's hunting at Habitat Flat. Except instead of, you know, a 6'3" strapping minor league baseball player blowing a cut down on the edge of the pool, it's, you know, short, fat, one-eyed guy, me. So, and that may indeed very well be why the mallards are
not be the problem.
Same way. Yeah, it could be that Tony's got them. It could be that Tony has killed them all before they got there, but I'm giving them my best Tony Vandermore impression. I'll give it to you that way.
All right. Look, last week when we left the story, you were packing the family up. Moving north. You were headed north to Missouri in that story.
Yes, St. Louis. Yep. So that would have been, I believe that was the year 2007. I moved my family to St. Louis. I had two little ones. Maddie would have been three. Katie would have been, maybe it was 2008. Maddie would have been about three or four. Katie would have been two or three. They were both little. Neither one of them were in school. Trip didn't exist yet. And we moved into a little apartment in St. Louis that the seminary owned. And I went to Covenant Theological Seminary. Be honest, I had no idea why, exactly why, but I was pretty convinced that was what the good Lord wanted us to do, so we did it. Started classes. My first class was Greek. I did it in the summer, and I was lost as a goose. I'll never forget, I passed my final Greek exam. I don't know whether it's kosher to, I don't know if you can say it's kosher or not, but I don't know what the, I don't know exactly what the morality of cheating in seminary is. I did not cheat on my final exam, but the final exam in Greek class was a passage of scripture from the New Testament that you had to translate. And I memorized that passage of scripture from the English Standard Version of the Bible. And I wrote vocabulary words above the top of every one of those Greek words. That was how I passed Greek class. So I don't know if you'd consider that cheating in seminary or not, but seminary was really hard for me. Me and Greek didn't get along so well. That was a hard language. But we did that for, I was there 2 years, and that was a cool time for us as a family, but it was really hard. I was taking full-time classes in summer and then the fall semester, spring semester, and then summer again. And I was taking just as many classes as they would give us because I wanted to finish, and supporting a family while you're trying to go to, you know, full-time, go to undergraduate doctorate level classes was just really hard for me and for us. I mean, it was, you can't hardly work, and if you can work, it's just a piddly job. And everybody I knew, like, did stuff at night. They cleaned carpets or things like that. And I actually had this harebrained idea when we got there. the All-Star game was in town, St. Louis Stadium, and I remember a buddy of mine in high school had made a bunch of money selling beer at the Memphis in May events through the month of May, you know, downtown, the barbecue festival and the music fest and the Sunset Symphony and all that stuff. And so I told Lindy we were, you know, literally starving, you know, we're eating macaroni and cheese and ramen noodles and whatever, you know, we could find. I mean, literally starving in seminary. And I remember I told her, I was sitting on the couch in our little apartment and we were watching the All-Star game. And I said, I'll bet you that a guy with a little bit of personality could sell a bunch of beer at Cardinal Stadium and do good. And she was like, do what? And I said, well, I mean, we're going to have to make a little bit of money in order to do this, you know, get through seminary. And I said, you know, baseball, they play, what, like 140 or 160 games or something. I mean, they play a bunch of games. And I said, half of those games will be at home. I said, what if I went down to the stadium and got a job? And she said, they're not going to hire you to do that. And I said, honey, I mean, like, I've got an undergraduate degree with a minor in real estate. I mean, if anything, I'm overqualified to sell beer at Cardinal Stadium. I'm 30 years old or 28, whatever I was. I was like, why would they not? And she was like, whatever, roll your eyes, you know. Well, the next day after the All-Star game, I went down there and I found where the offices was and knocked on the door. And they said, actually, yeah, we are. We're hiring for beer salesmen. And I got a job as selling beer at Cardinal Stadium.
And were you the one walking up and down the seat?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
Like we sold 16-ounce beers, and they were $8.25. And so most people gave you a $10 bill. And so what you did was you checked in an hour before the game started, and you got this big red tub. They gave you two cases of beer. They spotted you two cases of beer. So you got 48 16-ounce beers. Well, that is real, really heavy. And you put 48 16-ounce plastic bottle beers in this tub, and then you put ice over the top of it. It was your job to sell them. And when you sold them, then you came back in and you bought the next case, and you paid for it with cash. Wow. They called it a commissary, and there were six of them in the stadium. They were kind of evenly dispersed. So they assigned you to a commissary, but you could go anywhere you wanted to within the stadium. And so I'd go in before the game, and you get your 48, and I'd usually buy an extra 24. So I'd carry 72 was what I could get in my tub. And I mean, they were turned upside down and sideways and in your pockets and every which way you could get them. With ice. And I mean, no lie, I think it weighed right at 200 pounds is what you were carrying. And I got me a big 3-inch wide strap of webbing and a couple of those giant carabiners that you get like at Lowe's. And I hooked them to the sides of that tub. And I figured out that, I mean, if you had more beer and you could keep it cold, then you could sell more because you were out there in front of the people instead of going back and forth up to the commissary. But you could go anywhere in the stadium you wanted. And so I just said, well, I figured the people that got the most money are going to be either right there behind home plate or down first baseline, you know, behind the dugout. And so I'd load up many beers as I could get in my tub, put as much ice in there as I could, and I'd go down there and camp out right behind home plate. So that's how I would do it. I'd fill up my tub, and I'd go down there I'd work between home plate and first base. Had a little outfit you had to wear.
So many things going on here. Number one, you're in seminary and you're going to the stadium to sell beer. This has got to be Presbyterian or Methodist seminary. It's not Baptist.
Presbyterian Church of America. That's right. Mm-hmm. PCA.
Yeah, I knew it couldn't be Baptist, man. You couldn't be.
Well, I grew up Southern. I grew up Southern Baptist. I mean, Jesus didn't turn the grape juice into more grape juice. He turned it into real wine, and people had a good time. And you know, at the wedding. So, I mean, I can debate the theology of the alcohol if you need me to. But yeah, so I'm in Presbyterian seminary, and I needed to put myself through seminary, and I decided the best way to do that was by selling beer at Cardinal Stadium. That was the best job I could find.
What was your secret? Did you have a secret yell? Did you have
I did. My yell was,
Let me tune up.
And now let me just say before I do this, okay? I don't do this for very many people. All right, this is.
You're doing it right now. You're doing it for about 11 or 12,000 people right now.
I mean, in all fairness to everybody, the acoustics of this being recorded over a telephone and going out on the podcast is not quite what it is in person, okay? So, at first I didn't really have a good yell. But there was this guy that worked the section that I did, and he was about a 6'2" black fella. And, I mean, he had muscles. Like, you remember how when Michael Jordan was playing that there was, like, a rumor that went around that black people had an extra muscle in their calf leg? Like, you remember that, how that went around for a while?
Yeah.
All right. I'm telling you, this guy had an extra muscle in every muscle group in his body. Like, he looked like a bodybuilder. And he would go down the front of the aisle, and he would put a beer in between all of his fingers, like on his left hand and his right hand. He'd hold five of them, and he would do curls, and he would flex his biceps, and he'd roll his sleeves up. And I told Lindy after the first or second night that I sold beer there in the stadium, I said, I'm going to have to figure something out because that guy's kicking my butt. And so I did two things. The first thing I did was I learned how to yell like everybody else. So I'd take a deep breath, and I'd go, it's cold, it's cold, you know, too cold in the home. And I'd come up with all kinds of cute things to say like that. And then once I'd sell one to somebody, I'd kneel down beside them, and I would tell them about the beer that I was passing them. And, you know, this is an ice cold Bud Light. And I'd say, you know, I'm working on commission, and I go to the seminary there on the east side of town.
Oh, no, you threw out the seminary in the conversation.
I'd say, listen, every one of us in here in this stadium is selling beer on commission. And I'd look them right in the eyes, and I'd say, I would really appreciate it if you'd buy all your beer from me tonight. And these little ladies would just look you right in the eyes, and they'd say, sweetheart, just make sure that I don't run out. And you'd say, yes, ma'am. And then you'd just be there on their aisle all night long. And so, you know, you had to work with what you had, right? I mean, I didn't have biceps that, you know, look like pistons off of a Cummins engine. I mean, I just didn't have that going for me.
So you went with the charm. I like it.
That's right. So then you'd get some regulars in your area that you worked. And so, but I mean, by and large, it was a great job for somebody that was in school. And I mean, you'd get down there an hour before the game. You could only sell till the seventh inning. So in like 2.5 hours, I'd make $300 or $400. And you do a couple of those a week, you know, and you could pay your bills, you know, if you're eating ramen noodles and macaroni and cheese and, you know, Lipton iced tea kind of thing. You could get through. By the time I left seminary, there were six other people in seminary that were working at the stadium. And the stadium the stadium figured it out. Like, I told them, I said, I'm telling y'all, this is a better job than what anybody doing what we do in school could get. And y'all ought to reach out to the school because these are high character individuals.
They're willing to work.
These are not high school kids. They're not right out of college. Most of these people in seminary have gone – and done something in a career between college and where they are today. And so you're talking about people that are 28 to 40 years old, most of them, got a family, and like they need to work. And they need to make 40 hours worth of $10 an hour wages in 2 hours, you know, because they got to go study. And I mean, people left and right, buddies of mine in school were selling beer. I'm telling you, it was a great job. Probably the favorite job I've ever had. I absolutely loved it. It was a blast to do. And you got done in the seventh inning. Pujols was there. I can't tell you how many times you'd finish, you'd cash out, and then you'd walk down there right behind home plate, and you'd watch the last two innings of the ball game. And the Cardinals were so good then. I mean, it was an absolute blast.
This is 100% of a different way than I expected this seminary episode to go. But I'm loving being along for this one. Yeah, so continue on.
So I'm in seminary, and I live in this little apartment, and we lived on campus right there at 270 and 6440, if you know where that is in St. Louis, straight on the that'd be on the west side of town where all the interstates come together, right by the Mercy Hospital, and we lived there. And in those days, 2005, 2006, 2007, 2008, through those days, there were a couple of big web forums, and one of them was the Refuge Hunters Forum, or Refuge Forums, you know, and they had the different flyaway pages, and of course, MS Ducks was one of them, and I wasn't in on MS Ducks or whatever initially, but there was tons and tons of chatter on the internet about cutdowns for all those years, and about, you know, the Black Olds, and kind of this cult following of people that, and it was all real secretive and cryptic. And if you kind of followed into those forums all the time, like, you'd see people, they'd make comments about, you know, a cutdown flipped around backwards, and there were different names that they called them, Black Corn and the Black Stick of Death and blah, 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 and all these different things. Well, about, I don't know, I read a lot of those forums while I was sitting in class, and I probably should have been paying attention, to be perfectly honest. And I got interested, and I knew a little bit about Olds, and had messed with some cutdowns, and I'd talked to some people, and I'd met a few different people that blew them, and I was kind of geeked out by it, and I had a few of them, and I knew a few people that did a real good job of cutting them, and so I had all these things kind of floating around in my world, and I had a lot of time on my hands because I'm selling beer at Cardinal Stadium, or I'm studying Greek, you know, basically, and so, like, I had a lot of downtime in between there, yeah, and in counseling classes, you know, and all this stuff. So I'd read all these forums. Well, my best friend at the time was a guy in Memphis named Wes Reed. And Wes and I went all the way through elementary school and the city school system in Memphis, and then middle school. And we kept in touch. He went to a different high school than I went to, but we were buds. And Wes is real intelligent. He's an engineer. And he actually runs a division now of Medline, which is a huge medical, you know, distributor. And at the time, Wes was working for a little company in Memphis called Wright Medical. And he worked for them as an intern all through college. And I remember we were talking about these Olds and how cool they were. And there was so much talk through, like, 06, 07, 08 about cut these forums that you just about could not buy one on eBay. Facebook groups like Duck South and Call Nuts and Duck Call Exchange, like, all those pages didn't exist at the time, okay? So it was just the forums, and there were some buy-sell trade pages on the forums, and there was eBay. But that's about it. And so the price of these Olds was just kind of going through the roof. And so we started trying to figure out how we could get our hands on some, and to be perfectly honest, like, there were a couple of us in our little group of buddies that hunted that blew cutdowns, but not everybody did. And so I'll never forget one summer we decided that our goal was going to be, we were going to get everybody in our group a cutdown, and I was going to cut it for them. And so we did. We found a bunch of Olds from somebody on eBay, and I bought them, and I cut them down in my apartment there at the seminary. And I gave them to all of them. And we had a plan. The plan was, this year we're going to all blow cutdowns, and we're going to see if it makes a difference. And this will be about, I don't know, 07, somewhere in there. Mm. And so we did. We messed with them. And it made a difference, you know. And we knew it was going to. Like we'd hunted with them enough, and we'd hunted with enough other people that had them, were cut down, you know, goobers, that we knew it was going to make a difference. Well, I'm in seminary, we're messing with these calls, and Wes and I get to talking about, there ought to be some way that an entrepreneur could make these duck callers and make them more affordable than what the astronomical prices that's being demanded on eBay and stuff ought to be. And mind you, at the time, there's no Mondo, there's no Black Ops.
No, that's what I was saying. And during that same time, I to just get my hands on like two or three just to have them because the demand went so crazy. Right. I've always loved them. I just wanted them just to have them, like, so I could give them to my kids and stuff at some point.
Right, correct.
Like, that was, and, but my gosh, you could, of course, I was in 07, I was graduating high school. I couldn't afford what Olds were all of a sudden going for, all of a sudden.
Correct. And you know, and on a Bud Light salary, I couldn't either. I mean.
I understand, yeah. It got crazy there for a while.
So I'm in seminary, we're in this little apartment, and I'm messing with these duck callers. And Wes and I start this conversation about what if we could figure out a way to mass produce a keyhole cut down that the world would love. And we talked about it for the longest time. And Wes and I have always been kind of entrepreneurial buddies. Like when I started cutting grass at 13, he did the same thing. He had a little nicer equipment than I did. His dad was a medical doctor that made a little more money than my dad did. And Wes was always better at stuff than me. He was taller, stronger, faster, everything. And so his lawn care business was a little better than mine, but we always kind of helped each other along the way. So we got to talking about it, and we were like, there ought to be a way. I mean, people are paying $150 for these things. And so Wes is a chemist. Okay, he's an engineer, but he's got all these chemists that work with him there at Wright Medical. And so we bought five Olds that we, best we could tell, were five generations of Olds. This would be now late 2008, spring of 2009. Okay, and Wes tells me, he said, buddy, we can figure out a way to get these things made if we could figure out what to make them out of. And so we had figured from talking to everybody and all the research that we can do that making them was one thing, but what they were made of was the magic. All right. So we bought these five Olds, and I mean, it cost us an arm and two legs to buy these five Olds because we bought some old ones, we bought some newer ones, we bought a lot more than five, but of all the ones we bought, we picked out what we thought were the five best. What you would call generations of them, okay? Because you got to realize Philip Sanford Old made the first curved tone board duck call in 1902 is when he patented his 348205 patent, okay? And that's for a flat reed and a curved tone board. Before that, everybody basically that made a duck call made a flat tone board and a curved reed. That's a metal reed duck call, right? It's a flat tone board, and then they put a little bend in the reed. So Philip Sanford did it the other way around, and that's what he filed his patent on. And his very first one was a big humpback tone board with a plastic reed or a plastic-ish reed and a round hole. And then he made the keyhole, and it went all through bunches of different variations of that through the years. But so we found five Olds that we thought were the best five representatives of the various quality generations. We tried to eliminate the ones we thought were crummy. And we had those ground down into a powder at a chemistry plant, and we had them analyzed. And I still have this. We got a printout of the chemical makeup of these different Olds. And we're doing this for market researches, and we're trying to be the next Bill Gates in duck calls. And we hadn't decided, we didn't know if we were ever going to sell one or not, but we were just trying to figure out a way to figure out what they were made of so we could replicate them. And in the meantime, I'd met a guy that was a sporting goods sales rep. You know, he was a basically he represented various brands. And he told me that what we should do is we should reach out to the Olt family since they weren't making any, and we should license the name, and we should make Olts, and it should say PS Olt, Pekin, Illinois, 348205. We ought to make them exactly like the very best ones that we'd ever found. And we thought, boy, that'd be brilliant. And so we started calling them and leaving messages, and we couldn't get anybody on the telephone. And after a while, we kind of gave up on that, and we kind of had our chemical analysis done. And so we decided that the next step would be to see if we could find a plastic material that represented our goal was to find a material that, that had all of the sound qualities, all the positive things about the Olds that we liked, but none of the negative things, like it wasn't fragile and it wasn't gonna change color and light, and it wasn't, you know, wasn't gonna, didn't taste like chewing tobacco when you tasted it because it had Bakelite and whatever in it, or so that was kind of our next step, was does something exist that would give us all this? And so Wes knew a guy who made plastic cocktails for like exotic medical parts. And now I'm kind of talking about something I don't really know about now, because Wes handled this part of it. But this guy's job was to sit down with medical device engineers and customize from this giant catalog of chemical qualities of plastics, a plastic product that met the needs of these chemical engineers. And so Wes started this conversation with this guy. Mind you, we really thought we were onto something, okay? We were reading all these forums about cutdowns and this and that, and we thought, man, if we could come up with this, man, we're going to be filthy rich. I won't be selling any more Bud Lights. We had no idea whether anybody would ever buy these things, you know. So let me push pause for just a go ahead.
No, that is a – we are out of time. I think that's a great stopping point. I think, I mean, because it's a big battle that's got to be coming up inside of you, you know, to take this into a business or continue on with seminary. No,
yeah.
I think
that's
a great stopping
point. Let me give you one more step, and that's a better stopping point if I can.
Yeah, go ahead.
It's not call related. So in the midst of all of this, okay, this would have been about the summer. This would have been the summer of 2009, okay? I took the kids with my wife. Lindy and I took Maddie and Katie to the movie theater. Actually, it would have been a Thursday afternoon. I didn't have any classes on Fridays. So Thursday afternoon, a fella invited me to play tennis. And, I mean, I didn't have a tennis racket, but I figured I needed some exercise. And I went to Walmart and bought a tennis racket to go play tennis. And I played tennis on these courts at Christian Brothers Collegiate High School in St. Louis. And if you've ever been to that campus, it's like kind of, it's on a high spot, like a flat high spot on a ridge. So it's kind of elevated. And when you're on the tennis court or on the football field there, the reason I'm telling you it's elevated is because you see the sky behind you. Like you don't, it's not like there's trees around you. It's basically just blue sky open behind you because you're kind of up high. We started kind of jacking around playing tennis, you know, hitting the ball back and forth. He said, all right, you want to really play? I mean, I was no tennis player, but I was like, all right, whatever. You know, sure. He serves the ball. And when he served the ball, he made a nice serve, and it wasn't hard. I mean, I'm a respectable athlete. I wasn't an invalid. And I couldn't see the ball. It bounced on the court. And I'll never forget, it hit me square in the center of the chest. And it really bothered me. I couldn't figure out why I couldn't see the ball.
Mm.
And I kind of blew it off, and I threw him the ball back. And I was really embarrassed, and it was frustrating. Because, I mean, it wasn't like the guy hit a 100-mile-an-hour serve. He just kind of hit a decent serve right to me, and I should have been able to return it. And he hit it again, and I saw him hit the ball, and I remember paying attention. I remember thinking, that shouldn't have happened. The ball should not have hit me in the chest. That looked like a knucklehead, you know, get with it kind of thing. Pay attention this time. So I got down, kind of paid attention, and he hit it again, and I saw it come off the tennis racket. I remember seeing it hit the court, and then I couldn't figure out where the ball was. I could see it, but I couldn't figure out where it was. And I kind of swung and missed like I was swatting a mosquito. And it was even more embarrassing than being hit in the chest. And I told him, I said, something's wrong with me. I don't know what it is, but I said, I can't see the ball. And I said, I don't know if it's like I need new contacts or if it's because the sky in the background. Like, you know how if you play basketball, Rocky, in a gym that the the seats are 100 yards from the rim. You know how it kind of changes your depth perception? It kind of jacks with you, and you have to kind of get dialed back in. And so I started making excuses like this. But deep down in my heart, I knew something was not right, and I couldn't figure out what it was. I couldn't put my finger on it, but I knew I'd hit enough baseballs in my life. You know, I'd played slow pitch softball and and basketball. Like, I played enough sports that I knew something was not right. And we kind of wrapped up the tennis. I came up with some excuse why I needed to go on home. And it bothered me. And the next morning, we took the kids to see Toy Story.
No more. Go ahead. No more. No more. We got to leave it hanging on this nail biter. This is two major stories in. We can't tell two major things in one episode.
Okay. All right. Okay.
This is why people hate
You're
us most of the time, Spence. Yeah. This is why we get messages going, "I hate you," because we stop it at times like this. But I agree.
This is a part of who you are.
Yeah.
And I want to spend a lot of time on this. I don't want it to be some conclusion of one episode.
Okay.
It's one of the main reasons that I follow you. It's because, never mind. I'll save it for next week. I didn't even know
it's
who
fine.
You
I mean,
were
I will
two or three
say,
years
I,
ago.
I will say that this next part that I'm going to tell you about is probably the most, you know, I hope I grow to be an old man and I don't die of a heart attack at 40. But when I look back at my life, the next part that we're going to tell about is probably the most pivotal kind of life-changing part of whatever, who I am, or I don't know how you want to say it, but it definitely shaped who I am. So that's fine, whatever. If you want
to you look, like I said, two or three years ago when I first started following you on social media, I had such great respect for who you were in this. You know, it was, without giving the story away about what you're fixing to talk about, you know, it was just, it showed how secure you were in who you were, I guess you'd say. That sounds stupid.
It's okay. I mean, you gotta be pretty comfortable in your own skin. You know, I mean, if you're not comfortable in your own skin, you better get that worked out, because everybody else has to deal with that skin. So, I mean, you might as well go ahead and deal with it too.
I mean, just watching your videos online, when videos started really getting popular on social media, I don't know how I came across one of your videos. I was like, man, me and this guy would be pretty good friends. If we ever met up somewhere, I think we'd be pretty good buddies.
It's hard for me to get past the Ole Miss part, though, Rocky. I mean, I went to seminary, but I did start to go to hell Ole Miss champ more than one time during Eli's career.
I don't know what it was about the Memphis game growing up, but I don't know if it was just when I was a little kid, if that was the only ticket my dad could actually get a ticket to, and that's no slight at Ole Miss or Memphis, but we always went to the Memphis game. It used to be always the first game of the year.
We never missed the Ole Miss game either, and it was because my dad always told me, he said, "Son, anybody that shakes their fist at the good Lord and says, 'Hotty toddy, who the hell are we?'" He said, "We need to beat their butts as best we can." I said, "Yes, sir." I said, "Go Tigers, go." We still got our butts whooped more times than not. But
I will say this before we close out, man. Y'all spoiled Eli senior year.
And Peyton's too.
That's right. That's right. Yeah, I forgot about that.
Memphis is the reason that neither one of the Mannings got a Heisman Trophy.
I forgot all about Peyton. That is true.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
All right. Well, Spence, man, I enjoyed it. I'm really looking forward to next week. Josh, thank you again for being here. We want to thank all of you that listened to this edition of the End of the Line podcast, powered by DuckSouth.com.
Ladies and gentlemen.